There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile on a Monday. Glad to have you here. Live local talk over the next couple of hours. You're a big part of the show. We're going to have you interact online and on the text line, on the phone line. Talk about that coming up in just a little bit. Hour number two, John Sharp joins us. We'll talk with him about, you know, last week there was another discussion about what to do with the Hank. We'll figure out where this is now as there are suitors and different ideas to keep some sort of baseball that keeps the contract going for Hank Aaron Stadium. We'll talk about that coming up in hour number two. Plus, Washington, how about this? There's lots of aspersion casting going on in Washington right now. I think it was Nadler earlier who had like three times in a probably a five-minute window said, quit casting aspersions. It's like it's more of, that I've heard that term in a long time. It's a semantics free-for-all up there. If you've been missing out on impeachment hearings today, it's basically like point of order. It's like a very bad model UN going on at this point. It's more of grandstanding from a politician to politician to trying to ask any real questions. So we'll get some clips of that. But believe me, you haven't missed a whole bunch as of this morning. We are keeping up to date with the latest out of Pensacola and NES Pensacola, and increasing security now measures in the wake of the deadly attack. We have more on that coming up in just a little bit, as they put out a memo here earlier dealing with increased security at bases, not just here, but all over the country. And we'll talk about this subject in depth with a name you know from the judicial side, but do you know him from the military side? Judge Jim Patterson joins us now to talk more about his time at NAS Pensacola and kind of give us some insight into the things we've been talking about. Thanks for your time, Judge. Thanks for being on.
Hey, Sean. Glad to be here. Let me start with a quick disclaimer, okay?
Okay.
It was been 24 years since I served at Schools Command in Pensacola, so I can't comment on the current posture regarding security over there, and I don't want to cast aspersions on anybody or anything, but other than that, I'll be happy to talk about what my experience was working at Building 633 at Naval Aviation Schools Command.
Okay, yeah, you sent that to me in a text, that Building 633. So that 633 is what?
633 is Naval Aviation Schools Command, and it encompasses a whole bunch of different schools, but that is the main building. And these Saudi students, when I was there, I was the director of pre-flight school, and I got all the naval aviators that came through, the pilots and the NFOs, and they went through to take the big three training, the navigation, the engineering, and the aerodynamics, and then there was other stuff that they took too. But that's where, that is basically literally the front door of naval aviation.
Okay, that's the 101, like in the college level? I mean, that's...
Well, you take these guys, they graduate from the boat school, from the Naval Academy or ROTC, or back in my day from Aviation Officer Candidate School, and they bring their college degree down there, and that's, this is the, yeah, first class is for flight training. It's like entry level.
Okay, so there in that, there will be obviously naval aviators, American military folks there, but even when you were there, 93 through 95, there were Saudis in the school?
There's an international military student office that works out of Naval Aviation Schools Command, and so we had Saudi Arabian students. Before that, we had Iranians back when we were friends with the Shah.
Wow.
All kind of international military students, officer and enlisted, that would come through Schools Command at Pensacola for training.
All right, so everybody in the, let's say we go into the navigation class. So back then, I know you can't speak to now, how big of a class is, how many people are in there together?
It might be 60 or 80. And I will say that I don't remember any international students training with us in those classes.
Okay, they were not in the same classes then.
I don't remember. I was an aviation officer candidate when I went through. And when I was school director, there was a guy named Sam Schilling who ran the IMSO office. And I don't, you know, it would depend on their proficiency. But when we interacted with them, it was actually in flight training. I do remember that.
Okay, so, but before, and help me with this, so, but they would go to this building 633 before they ever touched the controls, right?
That's exactly right.
So, I mean, is this a candidate, I keep putting it in civilian terms, but that's all I know, Judge. Is this like ground school?
Yeah, it's exactly what it is. Okay. Ground school.
Okay, so ground school class, and folks are there, and that's this building 633. You talked about the class size. Is it halls and halls of classrooms like a high school? Is it just a few rooms?
It's like a high school. There's schools all over the place. There's knife and fork school when they promote enlisted to officer. They call it knife and fork school. They teach them how to wear their khaki and all this service etiquette stuff. You have the air crewman candidate school, and the ones who are going to fly in the back learn how to be rescue swimmers and things like that. You have the pilots learning their nav, aero, and engines, and that's what the international students would go through. Now, they might have to have their own instructors or some remedial time because of the English component, but that's where they're learning the basics about how engines work or how, you know, what Bernoulli does to make an airplane fly.
Okay, and there, the way I understand it here, as of Friday, and you were telling me back in the 90s, that they're housed on base, right? These international students are in bunks somewhere at NAS Pensacola.
Generally, somewhere they would reserve a place for them to stay. What happens is, like, the academy graduates in the spring, and all these officers come down to Pensacola, and they get what they call stashed. They're waiting their turn to start flight training. And this young ensign who was killed with the other two watchstanders was a recent academy graduate, and more than likely he was stashed waiting for his chance to get through aviation preflight indoctrination, which is that ground school, and then to go to one of the VTs to start his training as an NFO.
They
stayed a lot of duty.
Okay, that's what I was going to say. So they're basically, to put it in layman's terms, they're waiting for their chance to take these classes, and in the meantime, they're gonna have other jobs there,
right?
At NAS Pensacola.
Exactly.
Okay, so, and it, you said it kind of, the not geography, but the way the school is set up and the way buildings are, you said that made sense where the watchstanders would be to where the gunmen might have been. I mean, I know you're not commenting specifically on this, but you're telling us kind of how it's laid out.
Basically, my impression would have been, when you come onto the building 633, it's what they call the quarter deck. Every ship has a quarter deck. Every building has a quarter deck. And the watchstanders, the ensign and his mate of the watch and the seaman would have been up there on the quarter deck someplace. And if you wanted to come take down a ship or a building, you'd want to neutralize the quarter deck first, because that's where alarms on a ship, that's where the intruder alert alarms would be and things like that. And I can actually tell you a story about when I was on Saratoga, when we had an incident that I still wonder what was going on.
Well, what happened?
Well, I was a lieutenant on Saratoga from 1991 to 1993, and I was on duty. I was on the watch from the midnight to 4 watch, and when you're in port, the quarter deck is down in the hangar bay, but you have the collision alarm. We have all the different alarms. And so about 2 in the morning, a big burly guy wearing a Cracker Jack uniform came aboard. We were in Port Trieste, Italy, at the northern tip of the Adriatic.
Okay.
And this guy comes, he's an enlisted guy, and he comes up the back brow where the enlisted guys come up, but he's heading for the quarterdeck where myself and my mate of the watch and the watchstanders were, and he had no business being up there. And the guy was huge, and he was real belligerent. He got in there and started kind of distracting us, and for one of the very few times in my career, during the Cold War, it always concerned me because we weren't armed. We didn't have sidearms. It wasn't like the sand pebbles. It was kind of stupid.
Huh.
And I always thought it was ridiculous. Here we are in port in a foreign country, and we don't have arms. Well, this time we did. They had given the mate of the watch a 9mm. Sorry, it was a 45. So anyway, this guy comes, and he's getting all belligerent, and I'm trying to get him away from the quarterdeck, and I told my mate of the watch, I said, jack around in that 45, and if this guy moves again, shoot him in the foot. And all of a sudden, the guy calms down, and we escort him away. Years later, fast forward to here in Mobile, I became friends with an old Master Chief, Master at Arms, and the Master at Arms is the Navy's police force, and I told him that story. And he said, you know, around that time, 91 to 93, Marchenko and SEAL Team 6 were running around embarrassing units by their lack of security. And he said, that may well have been the SEAL Team guys. And you know, wow. I don't want to sound like a braggart, but that guy was huge, and it would fit the thing. But this is what rings true, though. Our XO on the ship was a guy named Kaz Merrick, and he was a Class A number one jerk. And if it had gotten around the ship that Lieutenant Patterson told Petty Officer Schmuckatelli to jack around in that 45, I'd have been standing tall in front of the XO, and they'd have been looking at me like I was a nut. Well, I never heard anything about it.
Uh-huh.
And I said, so if I ever hit the pearly gates, the second question I want to ask St. Peter is, was that Marchenko?
Wow. Yeah. So in the security, you're talking about the security on the ship back then, but what about on the base then? Like, and I'll tell you not to do it, but I know you wouldn't say anything that would divulge a secret or anything, but security-wise, how can you picture this? Saudi national had a gun on his person. Is there any kind of...
If you've got a pass to get on base, you can get on. They don't stop and search you.
Okay.
You know, they just don't. We went to a reunion a couple months ago. About 650 of us from officer candidate school, all aviation officer candidate school, went over there. And there's now a security checkpoint on the other side of the museum because they let the civilians come to the museum. But once you pass that, there was a guy with an M16 who stopped us. He was wearing camis. And I had to show an ID before I got past him to go stay at the Navy Lodge. And when you're coming on main side at the main gate, there's a guy standing there. So I was kind of flabbergasted that the Escambia County Sheriff's Department had to come put this thing out. And like I said, I'm not casting dispersions on anybody.
Right.
But I know in my time in the Navy during the Cold War, I thought we were kind of lax on some of that.
And it is, for a guy like me that has no, you're doing a good job helping me kind of picture where things are laid out and what's policy. Of course, NAS Pensacola is a gigantic piece of property.
Right. Well, you know, let's go back into history. We just had December the 7th roll by.
Yes.
December 7th, 1941, guys were having to bust the locks off of ready ammunition lockers so that they could start shooting back at the Japanese because it was a Sunday morning in peacetime, and you don't just walk around with a gun strapped to you.
And that would be, even though obviously United States, there was a war going on, and, you know, you realize the Japanese were out there somewhere. In this case, those were folks that school on a Friday at NAS Pensacola. I mean, on the Northern Gulf Coast, probably thinking more about what they're going to do over the weekend than any kind of attack.
Oh, yeah.
Wow. It is interesting. I know that now, I guess, the FBI has taken over, you know, it's over the investigation.
Well, yeah, actually, we had a criminal trial set for today in my court, and we had to continue it because the officer over here who was going to testify is part of that FBI task force, and he's over at NASP right now.
Wow. So they're calling in the assets. I'm sure they're all working on this because it's not just us here at home that want this answer, but I'm sure your brethren in the military and all Americans want to know what happened.
Well, I can imagine the Saudi king is not going to be real happy with this guy, and I would hate to be him if he ever gets back to Saudi Arabia.
Well,
I guess he's dead, though, so he's not going.
Yeah, but they're now, well, I don't bring in the discussion.
Yeah,
there's discussion
the other
of other
guys
people.
Are innocent until proven, but if they get proven, they're going to have some problems.
That's for sure. And this is, I may have to lean on you as we go forward here in this investigation to get more of the scope of NAS Pensacola, but Judge Jim Patterson, thank you for your service, as always, to our country, your time there.
I wish I could do it again. They might have to give me some Geritol to get through it, but I'd do it again in a heartbeat.
I know you would. Judge, thanks for your time. Thanks for describing that for us. All right, Judge Jim Patterson joining us to talk about his time at NAS Pensacola and kind of how it was laid out. And we were doing this back in 93, 95, this same training of pilots from foreign entities, and the Saudis were training there back then. All right, come back. We'll grab some calls on this at 343-0106, 343-0106. We'll go through the what's been put out now, increased security at bases around the country, around the world, after the attack right here on the Northern Gulf Coast. We'll maybe ask some questions. Maybe you got some questions to ask why certain things were certain ways. Was it lax? Or is it, what was it supposed to be? I can't say it's lax because I don't have any experience in saying how you should regulate things on a military base, but it does leave, I think, a lot of questions for us out here. We'll get to those when we get back. 343-0106.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Before he was a judge, before he did law school, a pilot, Judge Jim Patterson. Interesting about his time back in the 90s at NAS Pensacola. As we try to just kind of piece together maybe the why is the toughest question. Maybe the how is the first thing we start figuring out at NAS Pensacola and the murder spree that went down on Friday. By the way, welcome to the show, Midday Mobile. Hey, y'all, I'm Sean. Phone number, text line, 343-0106, 343-0106. John Sharp's going to join us next hour. I'll read this story right now to you, though. This is from Lita Gore at AL.com. And this goes back to the question about the security measures at NAS Pensacola. Let me frame it this way. I don't know what is right and what is wrong. I did not serve. And I did not serve at NAS Pensacola. I did not serve anywhere. I don't know how it's supposed to be. I know there's a lot of people, if you look on social media, that are experts, right? You know, that didn't serve. They're just people, oh, I'll tell you what it should be. I don't know. I'd love to hear from people that were like Judge Patterson, that were there at NAS Pensacola, that have been in similar facilities, to figure out the best way to secure or prevent things like this from happening. But I don't know all the protocols in line. But this security measures being added today. The story from Lita Gore at AL.com said security measures at U.S. military bases will be increased in the wake of the deadly shootings at Joint Base Pearl Harbor, Hickam Field in Hawaii, and Naval Air Station Pensacola in Florida. A message posted to Twitter, U.S. Northern Command, known as NORTHCOM, said it has directed its installations to, quote, immediately assess force protection measures and implement increased random security measures to their facilities, end quote. The details of the increased measures were not announced. That's good. I like that. I think that's, people say, oh, they didn't. I'm happy we didn't. Don't play your hand too early. NORTHCOM, NORTHCOM, one of 11 combatant commands, provides military support for the continental U.S. The messages come following the deadly shootings at two naval facilities. So they're doing something. Of course, I mean, I want to ask why didn't we do it before? I don't know what they were doing. And you may never know that there was a great security system in place that somehow was bested by this person, this dirtbag, who wanted to kill folks. And you know, the other pieces of information that were coming out this morning, we talked about, AP had one story. Now, we'll wait for all this stuff to settle out and see if there's more information, if this is real or this is conjecture. I think in the AP story, and I am paraphrasing here, but they attributed their information to a ranking official at NAS Pensacola. They did not divulge who it was, the whole, you know, anonymity. But who said, in addition to the murder spree that went on in that building 633, they also had, this is from the AP story, there was another Saudi student that was outside the building filming, videotaping what was going on, and there were two more nearby in a vehicle during this going on. Now, I've heard that from the one source out of the AP story. To me, you know, we'll have the stories, we'll have a news update here in a second from my friend Devin Walsh from News 5, and he'll talk about the, you know, the sequestration of the troops, of the Saudi troops over there. They can't leave the base at NAS Pensacola. But if that's true, and there was somebody who was filming, so knowing that this attack was going to happen, was filming, and two people nearby in a vehicle, why are they not in custody? I mean custody beyond being inside a military base. Are they not looking through bars? I really need to figure that out, and hopefully we'll find some more information. So Donald asks, I have a question. Are there foreign national aviators allowed to train with live fire? What could happen if one used a jet for live fire? Donald, I don't know that for a fact. I would guess no, But I, you know, I will dig into this. If somebody who has experience in this wants to let us know on the text line, I would say no. I would guess no on that. And by the way, the other part of this is, how did this foreign national, this Saudi national, get a gun? Remember, because the story, he legally bought that Glock. And if you go through the ATF's website, and it, there's a section here, I think I linked it earlier this morning on the on my Twitter feed. If I don't, I'll pop this back up. It says, may a non-immigrant alien who has been admitted to the United States under a non-immigrant visa possess a firearm or ammunition in the United States. Now, here's the problem. This is what's been thrown around. That says possess, not purchase. Because there's this, there's an exception for hunting, and there's an exception for if they're foreign law enforcement. But I'll give you the words from the ATF website coming up here in just a second. And maybe you can make it. How did this guy go down to the store and not as an American citizen, right? Remember, Second Amendment for Americans, right? And purchase his firearm. Talk about that when we get back. News is next.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 1236 FM Talk 106.5. Phone number 343-0106, text number 343-0106, website fmtalk1065.com. You can find us at fmtalk1065 on Twitter and facebook.com/fmtalk1065. That's all. No, then there's Instagram. You could search. It's not our most populated social media platform. We're working on that. Maybe I'll go ahead and resign myself to work on that more even in 2020. You know, this year I was going to remind you more about the TuneIn Radio app, which I'm doing right now. It's how you listen to us on your smartphone. It's just one TuneIn made into one word, TuneIn, and then radio. It's a free app, works on Android or iPhone. Listen to us anywhere you get a connection there on the smartphone. You can stream the radio station. It's really cool, too, because if you get a call or a text, it'll pause it for a second. If you get a call come in, it'll pause the audio. You can talk to whomever. And then when you finish the call, you can pick the show back up wherever you left off. It holds your place in it, kind of like in a DVR kind of way, but for radio. So TuneIn Radio, put that on your smartphone, listen to us wherever you go. Plus, you can get podcasts. Our podcasts that are available through our website or iTunes or Stitcher or Spotify or podcasts. A lot of places get podcasts of the 40-plus hours a week of live local programming we do. Those podcasts also available through TuneIn Radio. So you can just listen to TuneIn Radio, then check podcast out there. There's a freemium version. It works just fine. It's all I've used for the last probably 8 years is the freemium version. Now, if you want to help out those folks, they're engaged in commerce, then let them, you know, give them some money, but you don't have to. All right, there's that. All right, to the text line here, and let's see here. Yeah, David says, with two Saudi Arabian nationals in the vehicle and one videotaping the incident, certainly being circumspect, could very well have an innocent and innocuous explanation. You do not want to arrest people because you have the evidence, before you have the evidence to support the charges. I agree, but a couple things here. Number one, David, I do follow what you're saying, and you know I'm funny like that. I believe in innocent until proven guilty. I believe in all those silly old constitutional things. But number one, these aren't American citizens. Number two, if you need to question them and maybe you know do a full debriefing, you got different laws too in dealing with people from other countries. I mean, could you argue that there might be a big flight risk in this situation? I would say yes. Once again, there may be a completely innocent explanation if this is true. Once again, you hear I keep caging it because there's one source out there. There's an AP story that says a ranking official at NAS Pensacola, under the condition of anonymity, said in addition to the murderous dirtbag, there were three other Saudi nationals, one videotaping, two in a car nearby. Now, I don't know that that's true, but if it is and you had a way to, wouldn't you want to figure out what's going on? And then the story about the party where they were watching the what, two nights beforehand watching the mass shooting videos? I mean, we need more information. I know the FBI is working on it now, and maybe we'll get a presser soon with any other additional details on this story. But it's just, and now I know that they're putting, I'm happy they're putting together whatever implementation of further securities at military bases around the country right now from that story that came out earlier. But why we shouldn't. So Monty says here, this is, Monty says, I have a contractor's badge that allows me access to NAS Pensacola. Once you're approved and get your Defense Biometric Identification System badge, it's basically an honor system. You won't bring a firearm onto the base. There's a sign stating it's prohibited to enter with firearms, but I've yet to undergo a vehicle search. Right, we've talked about that. How, I mean, the only people paying attention to a gun-free zone, Monty, would be somebody like you that wants to follow the law. Somebody bent on murdering other people, they don't care. That's why I'm wondering, where's the where's the closest armed person, good guys, to respond to something like that? And I mentioned the gun. Let me read back through this. And I talked about it some this morning. A lot of people are fairly asking how this guy got his pistol. So he's not an American citizen. People have Second Amendment. Lord knows, y'all, I'm, you know, pretty down with the Second Amendment, right? Pretty strong supporter of that. For American citizens, it doesn't apply to everybody. The same applies to American citizens. So I'm trying to figure out what the legality of purchasing a firearm for a national. I look through, this is close, but not exact. This is from the ATF's website, Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives. It said, may a non-immigrant alien... So not immigrant, but somebody who's not immigrant status, but alien. They're here. They're a tourist, right? So we could say they're a tourist. They're at flight school, whatever it is. It says, may a non-immigrant alien who has been admitted to the United States under a non-immigrant visa possess a firearm or ammunition in the United States. So the code reads this way. An alien admitted to the United States under a non-immigrant visa is prohibited from shipping, transporting, receiving, or possessing a firearm or ammunition unless the alien falls within one of the exceptions provided herein, and they give the code. It then goes on to say, such as a valid hunting license or permit, admitted for lawful hunting or sporting purposes. Could both of those, as much as the Glock 45 and 9 millimeter is a fantastic firearm, and don't load up my text line about the time you killed that deer with the Glock. I know, yeah, it could be done, but it's not exactly the go-to to hit the woods in Northwest Florida, right? So this person gets the Glock. It says, a valid hunting license or permit, admitted for lawful hunting or sporting purposes, and here's the rest of it. Certain official representatives of a foreign government or a foreign law enforcement officer of a friendly foreign government entering the United States on official law enforcement business. So is that certain official representatives of a foreign government? I wonder if that's the quality, because I tell you right now, I sent this out to some folks in law enforcement, and they were not familiar with how the law would be that would let this person buy this firearm. Maybe there's somebody here who does NICS checks on people. Have you ever had to do a NICS check on somebody who's not an American citizen? Because it says certain official representatives of a foreign government. Maybe you can make the argument if you're here representing the Saudi Air Force, right? That makes you a certain official representative of a foreign government. Maybe that's the exception that let the guy go. Listen, he could have probably got a gun another way, but it's in this case, according to the Escambia County Sheriff's Office presser, they talked about the guy going down to a store and obtaining the Glock and the ammunition. And I just got to ask this question: as much as I'm, you know, strong defendant of Second Amendment rights, they apply to American citizens. They don't just apply to everybody the same way. Let me take a quick call here. Tim is in, did we lose him? Tim is in Malbus. Hey, Tim, are you there?
Hey. Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I got you now. What's up?
Oh, hey, just listening to your comments and the news and everything I've heard, you know, over the weekend and all. But Listen, this guy, just real quick, this guy obviously has to be high up there as far as being capable of knowing what he's doing. I mean, he's a military guy. He's passed all the plus and minuses on their end when they put him over here to do what he's going to do. So whatever happened there, I mean, this isn't a crazy person or a person that's going to got to go to court because, I mean, I know he's dead, but I'm just saying, this isn't a person that we're going to look at and say, he just flipped out or whatever. So his buddies all know that he's fixing to do it. They decide to video him doing it. Well, he's going to do what he said he's going to do, and they're going to. So aren't they responsible too in a way that they could have told somebody, you know, hey, you know, this is going to happen tomorrow, or he's going to do that? I'm just curious. I mean, it's a bigger picture, but
yeah,
I'd say kick them all out, and I hate to say it, but like Trump would do, you know, kick them out and let's fix it before we allow them to stay where they are, and let's figure it out what's going on.
You know, do we change? Here's a tough thing. Hey, I appreciate the call. Yeah, but I was going to say, do we change the whole policy? So if we do this to train, if we do this to train allies, once again, we got to remember Saudi Arabia is an ally. So if we train, you know, countries that buy our military equipment or fight alongside with us or our allies, we train their pilots. And like somebody called in earlier, oh yeah, my buddy Walt said, hey, they're on not just in flying, they're training in all kind of military capacities.
Sure.
Yeah. Do we, okay, let's say, I mean, there's a lot of allies.
They're doing the right thing, but it's obvious they've done something wrong. You have to suffer the consequences. In other words, you know, they spoiled the whole plan. I mean, that affects their country. And now they have to say, hey, you know what, you can't do that right now, or give them a, you know, a little time to re-vet everybody to send over here and go over the whole group of them and say, you know, why are we doing this? You know, it's ridiculous just to look the other way and go, okay, you know, one guy got mad. But I believe it's more to it than that. I think these people know what they're doing. He's in the military. He come over here. He's learning to do this, this, and that, and the other. He's lucky, like somebody else said, he didn't get in the plane and just crash his plane somewhere else down the road.
There you go. Appreciate the call. Come right back. Talk more about this at 343-0106. How many countries train with us like that? We'll talk about that when we get back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
It's 12:52 FM Talk 106.5, and it is Midday Mobile on this Monday. Hey, coming up at top of the hour, Joe Brown from your CBD store, West Mobile, is going to join me for a couple minutes to talk about a program going on this week where you shop there and money goes back to great charities, great local charities. He'll talk to us about that at about 105 plus 115. John Sharp joins us, the latest on Hank Aaron Stadium. It's like we've had this discussion many times. That there's this feature in the contract around the Hank that requires there to be minor league baseball or its equivalent being played at the Hank for it to remain on the property it is. So the Hank, the actual structure, I guess, belongs to the city. The ground underneath does not. But we'll talk more about that and what the latest proposals out there are and what the council might do. We'll talk with John about 1:15, more about that. All right, lots of text here. People asking questions on the legality. Once again, this is coming from the ATF, and I'm trying to put the two things together because there's the presser from last week where they said the firearm that the murderer used was obtained legally. Then I go and look at this ATF, go to the ATF website. If you look, I can put the link up here. Although, ATF, you need to make it like tweetable. Like I have to do the old-fashioned way, cut and paste the whole URL and put it in. There's no hot link here at ATF.gov to be able to link the code here. But it says, in the cases, the only way somebody who is a non-immigrant alien, and that's important too. So this is not somebody who's come here to immigrate to the United States, not even a work visa, right? I mean, they're just training. So it's basically like a tourist, maybe one step above just a tourist visa. Like if you've traveled outside the United States, there's places where you go, you have to have a visa, right? So same thing here. So it says, a non-immigrant alien who has been admitted to the United States under a non-immigrant visa, can they possess a firearm or ammunition? So it goes on to say, no, with the exceptions being possessing a valid hunting license or permit. Talk about out of state, man, that probably charges a bunch. Or somebody admitted for lawful hunting or sporting purposes. And then here's the one that gets where I think it may fall under. Certain official representatives of a foreign government, comma, or a foreign law enforcement officer of a friendly foreign government entering the United States on official law enforcement business. But the first one, certain official representatives of a foreign government, that is pretty wide, right? You could probably find a lot of people could fall into that interpretation. So that's once again, I mean, I understand. It's the fox has already, you know, gone and murdered in the chicken coop there. We're trying to, but I do wonder what the, how that happened, right? Well, you know, and you know, Fred says kind of makes me wonder how many allies will turn against us when the world does go to war. Saudis, I don't think won't. They're once again, I've you heard me for 10 years. It's been an unpopular opinion, but I'm back then. Now it's probably getting to be a pretty popular opinion. I don't know that there's certain countries we're allied with, and pragmatically, I can turn around, put on my other hat, and argue to you all day long why the Saudis are a great ally. I mean, strategically, they are a consumer of our military industrial complex, right? Big time. They got the money to pay for it, and they need the jets and the armaments and the whole nine. It's why you train people here. Let's get down to it. I mean, you train people to know, number one, that your allies, I know the nice thing to say is, and there's truth to it, that your allies will be able to fight better, so therefore we won't have to go fight their wars. Number two, to keep your allies close and engaged with you and members of the military to hopefully keep them as allies. But number three, you want to train them on stuff that American companies make. You want to train them, whether it be a fighter jet, or it be a rifle, or it be a rocket system, or what, a drone, whatever. Something that American companies make in the defense industry, you want to train them on that so they go back to their country, they're trained on that, and they buy it. I mean, that's just the business of it. I mean, it's ain't pretty, but it's the truth. So, in that relationship, the Saudis are, you know, a good fit, right? They got the cash and they need the stuff. Problem we got here on the flip side is, and not that every ally is not a duplicate, right, or an analog of our country, but there are certain things where just even as of late, where you see a split and a rift between the general ideas of people that are allied and other countries in the mix. I mean, I've asked this about Turkey as of late. It just, it goes worth saying. All right. Okay, yeah, coming back, John Sharp's going to join us. Also, Joe Brown will take your calls at 343-0106. Oh, did you see the... It's funny, after all the discussion we've had about the Porch Bandit Creek Indians, talking about their compact with the state, which I can't wait to get into more, with Mac McCutcheon saying the other day he was open to like any kind of lotto or gambling or those kind of things. Saw a story from Jason Johnson over at Lanyap. He put this out late last week. Says BOA, Choctaw Indians, seeking federal recognition once again. I know they made this run back in the late 70s, I think, making another run at tribal sovereignty. We'll talk about that, too, coming up next hour. All right, here for you then, 343-0106, FM Talk 1065.com. This is Midday Mobile, and we're coming right back.